Modern stand-up comedy is rooted in the comedy acts that appeared on vaudeville stages during the turn of the 20th century. Vaudeville shows included a variety of acts, and the more you could do, the better your chances were for getting stage time. And unless you actually appeared on stage, you didn't get paid, even if you were signed to appear. For the first time, comedians worked out forms and structures that are still recognizable and used by comedians today. It was the age of fast-paced banter and slapstick, and it produced such performers as Bob Hope, Jack Benny, Jimmy Durante, the Marx Brothers, and Burns and Allen. In the 1920s and 30s, narrative was introduced, so that instead of humorous lectures or witticisms, jokes became more elaborate, more story-driven, with a particular destination in sight, the setup followed by the punchline. Performers began to actually write and craft their routines, and the result of these refinements created a comedy boom in the 1930s and 40s in what was called the Borscht Belt, which comprised a series of summer resorts in the Catskill Mountains in New York. The Borscht Belt was so called due to the large Jewish populations that vacationed there, with borscht the reference to the beet soup that was closely associated with Eastern European immigrants. The Loony Bin has been a venue for stand-up comedy in Wichita for a number of years. Its current location is Venue 215. Check their calendar for a schedule of the comics appearing there. For KMUW, this is Sandamore Coleman.
And I'm Fletcher Powell here on stage with Sandamore Coleman. Hey there, Sanda.
Hi, Fletcher.
And stand-up comedy, I gotta say, one of those things that I really admire the people who do it, whether they become really successful at it or not. Just trying it is something that makes me admire them.
Well, it does take a lot of guts to stand up on stage and risk people not laughing at you or laughing in a way that you don't want them to laugh. Vaudeville really gave birth to modern comedy in America. In spite of its name, which sounds French, and we're not going to get into that debate because there are a lot of different ideas about where the name came from. But it really was the breeding ground for stand-up comedy in America. And in fact, I think a particularly American kind of entertainment. When you think of vaudeville, you visualize these two guys dancing for their lives in their straw hats and their canes, or maybe a duo, a partnership where they're talking very quickly back and forth to each other, or maybe you think of a giant hook that comes out to drag away the performers that aren't doing so well. Those are our images, stock images that we think of when we think of vaudeville. But the headliners of vaudeville were people like Milton Berle and Red Skelton and Bob Hope and Jack Benny. If you remember these people, and I hope you do, you probably remember them from old movies and television. They were the ones who were able to transfer their talents to new forms of entertainment. But the tradition of vaudeville, the traditions of vaudeville, the conventions of vaudeville helped to form who they were. It was the most popular form of entertainment in America for at least 10 years. And although it didn't last, many of its conventions, forms, are still relevant to present-day comedy, as well as they began to build acts around personae. For example, everyone knew that Jack Benny was stingy. Everyone knew that Gracie Allen was looking for her brother. They had personalities, and that has survived and further developed as time has gone on. The shows in vaudeville had headliners, but they were also a roster of many different kinds of acts. It wasn't just comedians. It was, there might be a dog act. There might be a cowboy roping act. The more you could do, the better off you were. You could see songs, you could see magic, you could see dramatic readings. It was just a variety, acrobatics, a variety of entertainment available. And it grew out of the music hall entertainment of the mid-19th century. But the music hall audience was generally, well, was male. What happened was in 1881, Tony Pastor, who was a producer, a vaudeville producer, opened a theater in New York's Union Square, and he decreed there would be no liquor in the audience and that the material had to be fit for middle-class audiences. So what this meant was that suddenly women were at the shows and children were at the shows. And it became incredibly popular because of this widening of audience. So the acts were about 10 minutes long on the average, unless things went well or unless things went badly, in which case acts were extended or they were hooked off the stage. And that's why performers who were signed to perform on a particular night didn't necessarily perform that night. And of course, if they didn't appear on stage, they were not paid. The vaudeville became so popular that by 1900, there were 2,000 vaudeville houses in the country, which was half of all the theaters. And people loved it. There were three levels of vaudeville performance. There was the big time. And if you had made it to the big time, then you had two shows a day, a matinee and an evening show. And you went to the best theaters. You were paid better. The conditions were all around better. Small time, you might do, you do as many shows a day as they ask you to, and the conditions are terrible, and the pay is terrible, and you have to really love what you do to do small time. But it was a training ground, and that's how people saw it, as, you know, I can break into big time, but I have to do my time here in small time. And in between, of course, there was medium time, which was not quite big time, but better than small time. And the circuits, there was the East Coast Circuit, the West Coast Circuit, were referred to as times according to the level of the production. What happened was because vaudeville became so popular, a couple of businessmen stepped in, E.F. Albee and B.F. Keith, and they created the network, the circuit of theaters, and charged the artists 5%, and they had a strict rules and regulations about the material, the salaries, the conduct. In fact, the idea, the phrase blue material is rumored to come from the envelopes, the blue envelopes that the managers of the Keith Circuit would send back with censored gags. So it was a little bit harder for the comedians than the other performers, because what's funny in one town may not be so funny in another town, whereas a magician, if a magician is good, they will amaze you every time. But will it play in Peoria? That's where that expression came from, was from the vaudeville businesses. Bob Hope, for example, once bombed in Texas. And the manager of the theater said, you know, you need to relax and slow down and let these people get used to you. Because Bob Hope was a New Yorker. He was used to rapid fire. And according to the story, he took the advice, he relaxed, he laid back, and within a week, apparently he was doing very well. The other problem with comedy is that it's easy to steal. Mm-hmm. And comedians had their work pirated constantly. And it was easy to do because if you were at a show and you heard a joke and it landed pretty well, you could take that and go to the next city and tell it there yourself first. So there was, it was so common that Milton Berle sort of built it into his act that he was, that he stole most of his jokes. And he was, in fact, referred to as the thief of bad gags. So that tells you something. George Burns, here's another story from the from the trenches. George Burns apparently was so terrible when he first started out that he changed his name over 24 times so people would not be aware they were coming to see him again. He went by Jimmy Ferguson, Jimmy Delight. He didn't really find his footing until he ran into Gracie, but 24 times, to me, that's dedication, and yeah, he probably deserves his success. But, you know, it created conventions that we're familiar with today. The double acts, Burns and Allen, Martin and Lewis, the threesomes, like the Three Stooges, the Marx Brothers had four. Then the smiling MC with the rapier wit remarks, that is also from vaudeville. Within really almost 10 years, vaudeville sort of faded away. And what happened was, it was a combination of things. Broadway woke up. The Broadway Review, after World War I, Broadway reviews had more money and were able to elevate their production values. And so they began trying to steal vaudeville stars and were able to do that pretty easily because the pay was better and you didn't have to tour. And of course, also radio took a lot of the vaudeville comedians. Most people cite May 7th, 1932 as the end date of vaudeville because that is when the best vaudeville house in New York, the Palace, went from two-a-day shows to four-a-day shows. And then eventually, within a couple of months, the four-day shows mixed with short films. And not long after that, a couple of months later, they just started to show films. One way in which the vaudeville audiences or vaudeville comedians saw their status as performers lessening was a Variety magazine actually started adding legit to Broadway theater productions and vaude to vaudeville productions. So, you know, it's this over here and this over here. Ziegfeld took a lot of comedians and built shows around them. What happened was at that point, musical comedy began to come into existence because people wanted narrative. They wanted the comedians and they wanted the music, but they wanted something to bind them together. They wanted a story. And so people like Fanny Brice, Eddie Cantor, W.C. Fields, they were able to cross over into that area. But not everyone was that lucky. Some of the best expressions I've ever heard came from vaudeville. And I just want to tell you about a few of them. You hear people say, I trod the boards. Well, it refers to acting, and it refers to the soft wood that they used on the stages. And the wood was soft, so they could attach and detach stage settings quickly. The deuce spot was the second place on the bill, and it was considered the worst place to be because it was, you were easily forgettable, just the worst spot on the bill. Excess baggage refers to the non-performing spouse of a performer. A big finish is when you conclude an act with something, with kind of a surprise, something that was not part of the initial act. So say you're playing the banjo when you're dancing and you end with a pie in your face. That would be a big finish. To get your pictures back means that you have been fired. They have taken your promotional photos down from the lobby and handed them back to you. If you're playing to the haircuts, it means you're last on the bill, and you're playing to whoever is left in the audience. Anyone who has not already hit the door, that's who you're playing to. The stooge, of course, is an audience volunteer that is actually in on the joke. The straight man sets up the jokes. Ad lib is a spontaneous improvised line. It comes from ad libitum, at one's pleasure, and it's used in other fields like music and medicine. But in theater, it's a spontaneous remark, and Bob Hope was famous for those. So if you are not familiar with the old vaudeville players and their bits, once they did them on film or on the radio, they were captured. And so bits that had sustained them for 10 years were no longer sustainable because they had been captured and frozen in film and in time. But it's lucky for us because we can go dig those up and have a look at them. So if you're a young person and you're interested in comedy and you're interested in theater, go out and rent some old films, some old television shows, some old radio dramas, because they're some of the best. It's what our brand of comedy, it's a very American kind of comedy, and so much fun and so much a part of who we are still. So that's what I would suggest.
Well, I'm not even a young person, and I'm going to go dig some of that stuff up myself. That's On Stage for this week. Thanks, as always, Sanda.
Thank you.
And for KMUW, I'm Fletcher Powell.